Empire of the Suns.
Suns. Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm a writer, editor, reporter for ArizonaSports.com. Joining me on the other side of this table and microphone is Kevin Zimmerman. Hi, Kevin. How are you doing? How's life?
I was just going to make a joke about I almost walked off before we started the podcast after discussing what we're going to talk about on the podcast, but I'm going to be positive because it's an all-star break is over and we're back at it and I should be positive.
A fresh start, Devin Booker called it at practice today. I just got back from practice. It's Wednesday afternoon. The Suns play tomorrow in Cleveland, a.k.a. the Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris revenge game extravaganza. I'm excited.
Who's getting dunked on?
Who
DeAndre?
Is, getting on?
Is he going to get dunked on by Chris?
What about new 10-day guy?
Wait,
Ray Spalding?
Oh.
Did you know
that? Is that official yet?
It's not official yet.
Okay.
No, but
yeah.
Ray Spalding.
He's the latest, like, skinny, really skinny power forward guy who they're going to move on from and sign another.
Should be
skinny.
A center, but he's 3 inches too short.
Yes. They love those guys. They love signing those guys and not playing those guys ever.
This will be their fourth. They've had Eric Moreland, Quincy Acey. I can't even remember the last guy's name. Terry, was that?
Yeah,
last
Emmanuel
name?
Terry.
Emmanuel Terry, yeah. And Ray Spalding will be the fourth, and there's probably going to be a fifth, and there's probably going to be a sixth, and so on and so on. We are coming off the All-Star break. The Suns had some losses along the way, to say the least, the last of which was against the Clippers.
Least.
To say the least, meaning they've lost 15 in a row and 22 of their last 24. They lost 134-107 to the Los Angeles Clippers. I tweeted after the game that if Devin Booker does not finish out his contract extension in Phoenix, that is going to be the game I remember, because he had a 10-piece, 10 points through three quarters. And usually in those situations, like this game was, when they're down 15, 20, 30, 40 points, whatever, he will pick his spots to kind of get up to 20 to 22 points, then call it a night. Just chuck, garbage time, whatever. That's how he approaches it every time from what I've seen. His engagement and his intensity level doesn't really change from what it was at the start of the game. That's not to say that he picks up his intensity or it decreases, but it pretty much stays the same throughout a game most of the time. But in this one, I saw him do what I told you I referred to as the Rondo, where he drew a triple team, but he still had an open layup at the rim, and he just kicked it to the corner instead without even jumping or looking at the rim to shoot. And he was looking to pass more and not shoot, and it was just unlike I've ever seen him play before. And I think we can say, as people who have watched every basketball game he's ever played in the NBA, it was uncharacteristic of him, and he looked like he had... Given up is a very strong way of saying it, but I don't know what else to really call it. It looked like he was very, very ready for the All-Star break.
At the very least, was trying to get his teammates involved and playing out of character, yes. Yeah, that's not good. I mean, we're at the point now, which we've pushed off compared to the last few seasons, where they're at the point of, I don't know if they're listening to their head coach anymore. I don't know if he's motivating them. All that kind of thing. Everyone's been all over Igor about motivating, but it's been more sporadic, and like you see great performances and then a couple bad ones, great ones later on. So like, if I'm drawing like a picture of this, it's actually, and you make an average of level of play, it's been kind of average and steady. But as the All-Star break neared, it was starting to get where you're having these huge dips and staying down there. And that's what's concerning. It's not like just a one game. We didn't come out focused. It was where this losing is piling up. So I can't predict anything this franchise does. But for the sake of Igor's job security, for the sake of just a little stability heading into next year, they've just got to play steady ball. Like, don't worry about the wins even. It's just try to get better, try to take baby steps, try to stay focused, which is terrible saying that for the, I don't know, as long as we've done this podcast. But that's where we are right now entering this post All-Star break.
Just like we wouldn't entertain the discussion that Devin Booker is not good at basketball, we are not going to entertain the Suns are better without Devin Booker discussion until it has been under more serious and legitimate circumstances that are fair to him. I don't think these are those circumstances, but with that being said, since the start of the new year, the Suns have a negative 17 net rating when Booker is on the court. That is the second worst among the players who have been in the rotation throughout that time. And then when Booker is off the court, he has a negative, the team has a negative 5.4 net rating. That is the best of anyone in the rotation. In the 21 games that he has played, or sorry, the 16 games that he has played over that time.
I will say that, yeah, there's something to how they do play differently. Like, we're not saying they don't play differently, but you can't just say with this guy on the court, they're worse because he's not good, I think is the distinction. They play differently for sure, and that's on him and Igor to figure out, okay, how can we get back to swinging the ball a lot, having lots of guys touch it, having lots of guys contribute when you're on the court. I will go that far and say that he can get better at that, and that will help them. But it's also defensively, it's matchups, it's fitting him with the right guys around him, and involvement. Like, whenever he's out, it's about the other guys all getting involved. By the way, there's no point guard when that happens still, but they have to by necessity just to try to make up for him. So they've got to find a way to blend that with him. That doesn't mean they should trade Devin Booker or he's bad. He's poison. It's everything in this game is matchups, fit, all that stuff.
It's concerning to see the fan base begin to call him overrated and it becoming a popular take, and not just that one guy who's always in your mentions saying this garbage stuff. It's a lot of people starting to say this. Interesting side note on those numbers when I look them up. The off-court offensive ratings, the worst one on the team. Give it a guess. So when he's off the court, this is when they have their worst offensive rating.
No idea.
Kelly Oubre, 96.3. Yeah, which is
when he's off.
Which is when he's off.
Yeah.
96.3. The next closest guy in the rotation, Rashawn Holmes, 101.5. A discernible drop off. And I think there's some reasoning to that. Oubre is consistently attacking the basket and giving them someone who will do that and is always looking to score. And Booker is really the only other guy that is consistently attacking with in a positive way. Not in a reckless way. So I think there's something to that, and that's another interesting, should Oubre start the
Kelly,
rest of the year?
Yeah. You're on the Kelly train.
Among that discussion. But we will look forward now, not back. And is a really good break in the schedule. Booker brought this up. I just asked him at practice today, can you look at this as sort of like a reset? And I was going to ask him after this, but I didn't have to mention it. They play Cleveland on Thursday in Cleveland. Then they play Atlanta in Atlanta on Saturday and in Miami on Monday. The first two teams in particular are bad, and Miami's not that great. They can win.
Injured,
And they can win two out of three of those games. Not only can they get off this losing streak on one of those games, but they could win two out of three or even all three. Those are just three winnable games. So they're coming back from this break. And if there's ever a time in this whatever you want to call it, space that we have after the post All-Star break play for them to figure things out and looking at the schedule, I mean, there's another three-game run where they play at home against Chicago and Detroit and then at Sacramento. So maybe, but I think this is the three games where they can really figure things out because, again, the schedule goes back to being pretty rough. The Pelicans, Lakers, Bucks, Knicks are a good one, but then the Blazers, Warriors, and Jazz, and they're playing in the West, so they're just not really going to get many opportunities like this to not only have that 7 days off and away from each other to kind of reset, but also come back in to that game. What's the one, I think for me, the defense has been the thing that has jumped off the most during this run, but what's the one thing that stands out to you that you'll be watching for in that game specifically to try and see if something has changed? I don't want to say changed, but something has improved.
Out of the break?
Yeah.
I honestly just want to see point guard play. I want to see if Tyler Johnson is better than he's looked from a shooting standpoint, but also defensively and like creation is a problem for him too. Like, that's Melton's problem. Is Melton going to come back? You said he seems like he's going to play this week. So is he going to come back and show us like, hey, well, you missed me a lot because I can play defense. He's way up there as far as deflections. Like, if I don't know if there's a way to look up deflections per time, probably, but he's got to be ahead of most people in the NBA. But yeah, just his solidness playing point guard. Like, Tyler Johnson did not show enough where he was a whole lot better. And if he's not shooting, then he's definitely not going to be a whole lot better than Melton.
Yeah, I'm looking at, I spoiled my answer already, but the Suns have had way too many first quarters where they shoot 50% or 55% and they're down by 9 or 11 or 15 because they're allowing their the opposition to shoot 60 or 65%, and they also have more offensive rebounds, and the Suns also have more turnovers. And if they can just find a solid first quarter to jump out of, especially in Cleveland against that team, which I believe their starting lineup that they last used was Nwaba, Knight, Colin Sexton. So they went three-guard backcourt, and then it was Zubac and Kevin Love. I believe that was their five. So
I mean, wincing over here. You can't see that.
Flashbacks to last year's Suns lineups and some of the Suns lineups we saw from 2 years ago in terms of what they're rolling out there. So they are infinitely more talented than this Cleveland team, and I don't think it's close. It's funny how Cleveland has more wins than them. They have two more, I believe, three more. But if you look at talent, it's not even close. Like, Cleveland's the least talented, or next to New York maybe is the least talented team
in
the league.
East is trash, yeah.
And the Suns are top 20 in the league, I would say, when it comes to just pure talent. They're somewhere in there. So for me, it's really important to see if they actually realize this is an opportunity to... This is where it has to happen, too. I don't think it can happen 10 games in or 5 games in. It has to be right now, and if they can go 12-12 the rest of the way, because they have the talent and they have the two strong enough players who can carry them any night. I think DeAndre is at that point now with his play through this season where he can give you a night where he has 25-15, because he's done it a couple of times already.
Yeah, I think what I've learned is we can discuss and debate over Luka or him, but he's made a huge difference. When Book was healthy and he was out, it was no chance. When Book's out and he's in, no chance. They need both of them. They need to lean on him a little more. I think Igor's been, from what I can tell, he just doesn't want to put too much on him, especially offensively, and wants to focus on that defense. Anytime you ask him, it's always about defense. And it's like, all right, well, he's getting better there, but you could throw him the ball into him a little more. It's going to be on those guys to kind of get out of this. Do you want to talk about I thought we were going to be positive, but you wrote this thing that had a lot of research, so let's shine some light on that because you spent time doing it. Suns could be the third team in the last 25 years, if they finish with the worst record in the NBA, to have two consecutive seasons with the worst record. Mm-hmm. The other teams who have done it, the Bulls and the Grizzlies, did not come out of that well.
Yeah, I was just curious about it from how did it go for them once they did it?
Yeah.
And what I found, in my opinion, was just a lot of this is a once in a decade type of luck situation, or even for the Grizzlies, in my opinion, like a once in a lifetime type of just terrible luck. I think that's what I found. Of course, longtime NBA fans will know that the Chicago Bulls, the 2000 to 2002 run, that was where they had Elton Brand as the number one overall pick in the late 90s, and then they decided it was a good idea to trade him for Tyson Chandler at the number two overall spot, and then draft Eddie Curry ahead of Shane Battier and Jason Richardson. Oops. So then they built their team around two raw centers who play the same position, and those two guys averaged under 7 points a game in their rookie year.
Who's running that team? It wasn't Earl Watson, was it?
That was Krause, yeah. Earl Watson.
Loves him some centers.
Nice. That was Krause, and then they went to the whole, like, Paxson's running the team. We signed Scottie Pippen again.
Okay, yeah.
This guy's I can't remember who was our head coach, but it was Cartwright. So it's like, look, we're back to the dynasty days, and turns out that doesn't really work. I mean, it kind of did. They won 47 games, but the point is they made that horrific decision, and then on top of that, I think the underlying thing is that from that piece I tried to highlight a couple of times was that they traded Ron Artest and Brad Miller to Indiana for Travis Best and Jalen Rose to get some veteran help, which is what they needed. But at the same time, they traded two guys who turned into all-stars in the, within the next 3 years. So that was those were the two biggest mistakes. But I think the largest shift was Jay Williams. He was the number two overall pick. And if you saw him at Duke, I was very young, but I've gone back and watched a lot of him since because he's just one of the great what-ifs with injuries. He was pretty... He showed signs in his rookie year. He wasn't like taking over the league by any means, but he showed signs that he was going to be a pretty good point guard coming into the league. And then after his rookie year, he gets in a motorcycle accident, ends his career, and then they take Kirk Heinrich in the next draft. It happened a week before the draft, which is probably the craziest part of that story. So then that whole group, Tyson Chandler, they re-sign, but then they make the decision to sign an aging Ben Wallace to in free agency and then trade Tyson Chandler, who of course winds up becoming a defensive player of the year and a great, great player in the league. Eddie Curry has this whole thing with his conditioning that doesn't work out. And so those three guys were the three main returns they got from all that losing, and they're all gone. So you can look at the Suns automatically and say, like, even if they trade Devin Booker in 2 to 3 years or whatever because he wants out, they're still going to have DeAndre Ayton for quite a while, and he's already working out better than any of those three guys.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. And when you look at the Grizzlies, what, they go through Bibby, they have Sharif Abdur-Rahim, pretty good players, but they don't have what we think are franchise cornerstones. When you talk about Booker, Ayton, you know those guys are going to be starting caliber, at least if not all-star level guys in the future. So they're not in a bad spot. And then you also mentioned Vancouver just had pretty terrible luck and they couldn't even get what that you said, the top pick by the rule.
Man, I can't imagine Twitter being a thing back then and just me tweeting about this every single day, how like justice for Vancouver, justice for Toronto, because the NBA decided at a time in the mid 90s when there wasn't a lot of depth in the league that they were going to protect the team's top eight players, which was already too much for how much talent there wasn't in the league. So the first overall pick in the expansion draft for the Grizzlies was Greg Anthony, who maybe a seventh, eighth option, ninth option on a good team like in his heyday. And he's supposed to be the cornerstone of the franchise now. And then you say, well, they're going to draft their cornerstone, right? Both teams picked sixth and seventh in their first draft, which was in 1995. And that happened to be the draft where Jerry Stackhouse, Rasheed Wallace, Antonio McDyess, and Kevin Garnett all went in the top five. Vancouver gets your boy, Big Country.
Love Big Country.
Bryant Reeves. And then shout out to Mighty Mouse. Damon Stoudemire went seventh to Toronto. So then they go in the 96, 97, 98 drafts, and they also cannot have the top pick in that draft for whatever reason. Again, the rule for like the top five, I can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you can see how unfair it is that they can't get the number one pick the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Because you just have to look at the talent after that first year and realize like they're going to need something. And I think the thing that they didn't see coming was Vancouver and Toronto both being unable to get free agents, really.
Yeah, I'm curious. We should look into that more just out of curiosity because it's like, dude, I could see agents being like, that team has no talent. We don't want my first overall pick going there. But then it's like, I'm pretty educated on Vancouver and Toronto being nice.
They're dope. Yeah.
Good. Even like Toronto, I think. Actually, Damon Stoudemire told me this a long time ago when I did an interview with him, that Toronto is like the best NBA city. Like, I found
a random Big Country article from 2 or 3 years ago, and there were quotes from multiple players at the time that were saying, we just didn't know Vancouver was nice. We didn't know how another government was going to work. We didn't know how moving to another country was going to work. And it was all these potential...
Those taxes or the social...
Yeah, all those potential red flags that they just assumed at the time, and it turns out that once everyone spent a couple years in the league, they realized they traveled to Vancouver for those games. Like, oh, this place pretty nice. Yeah, not too bad. Went to Toronto, had a couple nights out. Oh, this place is pretty good. But anyway, the Grizzlies finished with the worst record in 96, and that should have gave them the best chance at getting someone by the name of Allen Iverson.
He was good, I think.
Heard of him before. They get Sharif Abdur-Rahim instead. Oops. And then also, actually, that was, no, that was 96. That was Iverson. And then they missed out on Stephon Marbury, Ray Allen, and Antoine Walker, who were the next three selections after Sharif Abdur-Rahim, which is where Scott Howard pointed out on Twitter to me, like, that's where you kind of get triggered if you're a Suns fan a bit and wonder if there's some similarities there to some of the drafts the Suns have had in the past couple of years. Like, did they get Shareef Abdul-Rahim or someone even worse, and it turns out they were all-star, even Hall of Fame caliber players just a couple of spots ahead of them. And then in 97, they have the worst record again, best chance at number one pick, but they can't get it, and that number one pick is Tim Duncan, and even worse, they fall to fourth in the lottery, and third was Chauncey Billups.
Chauncey wasn't good for a bit, but...
He wasn't good for a bit, but he was still... He had the sauce.
He did end up having the sauce, it turned out.
They needed that special... That's how screwed they were. They needed that transcendent talent, and it turns out they were in a situation where they could have gotten it and should have quite honestly gotten it.
Yeah.
But they were just unlucky, so that's a really long-winded way of recapping the piece, and by saying those are two... It makes the piece kind of sound pointless, but that's not what it was. It was looking back and showing that... The last two times this has happened, there's nothing really comparable to it.
And one team couldn't even survive in that city.
Yeah.
Which we're apparently fine now because we got the arena thing down.
And the Bulls won 47 games in a couple of years later with a completely different group. Ben Gordon, Heinrich, Luol Deng. Curry was in there for a bit, and so was Chandler, but that was just like a completely different group.
And then they had a good run when you get Derrick Rose, but that's...
Joakim Noah, and then they got Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, a decade later.
Yeah, but I think the concerning thing is looking at, I wrote this at the end, where you just look at the things that have happened for the Suns along the way, and you've got 2016, which includes the point guard trades and then that draft, and then you look most recently at this year, what they tried to do this season, which was add veterans. It didn't really help, which is what Chicago did. They added Ron Mercer and Brad Miller in free agency in a similar kind of way. And the Suns don't have a point guard this year. Seems like a terrible thing to do. And then
just want to point that out.
And then does the 2018 NBA draft selection of Ayton over Doncic, Bagley, Jackson, Trae Young, whoever it winds up to be, is that a thing we look at 10 to 15 years later and say, yes, the Suns got Ayton and he was great, but they missed out on the guy that they really needed to get them out of the situation and it wound up not happening.
Yeah.
And this year, if they do get the worst record again, it was kind of meaningless because the draft lottery odds have changed and it doesn't even give them the best chance at Zion anymore.
We'll see. I mean, if they're top three, then they have an even odds of getting the top pick, right? And then it's not a huge drop off the next, I think, two slots. So
they have like their best chances at the fifth pick if they land first or something. It's stupid. It's always been that way, though.
Do you want to talk about draft a little bit? We can dip into this because tonight is Duke UNC. I haven't figured out whether the high ticket prices are actually due to Zion or not because everyone's yelling about it at each other on the internet, and I'm just not going to put my energy toward that. But it's apparently pricey to attend for whatever reason. I wanted to bring this up because Cam Reddish has been doing the stuff that we thought he had, and he's been looking like I think he was pretty big in that comeback against Louisville, and just a really smooth shooter, has some length to him, smooth handles. Is he's like,
he came out of the same factory as Paul George.
Yeah,
but
no,
who knows,
no
man.
On the defense, maybe.
I don't know, like, I mean, it's all there.
Yeah,
I wrote at the start of the season, or not wrote, but tweeted or something. I might have written it actually, that this draft there were four or five guys that were in consideration for the number one pick before we saw Zion for 5 seconds in the Kentucky opener. We're like, oh, never mind. But
don't need to
Reddish,
do this.
Reddish has that skill. He has the skill to do so many things. So when you see, I tweeted a couple, or included in the piece a couple of videos from the Florida State game where he hits this like really smooth catch and shoot three off a set. And then he hits a nice little reverse layup. And then people have been tweeting out a couple of defense clips of him recently as well. He can just be this super well-rounded guy. And the main focus of my writing in there, mostly because I had Ja Morant sixth again, is that the most valuable thing in the league right now is the 2-3 combo guys. And some of those guys who can move down and play a power forward, which is where you bring up Paul George again. He's maybe the chief example. Is there someone else? Maybe Kawhi?
Kawhi.
Is Paul Kawhi George, like the
what they want Josh Jackson to be?
Yeah, yeah. Josh is another one. I stated in the thing, the Suns have three of these guys, technically. They have Bridges, they have Oubre, and they have Jackson. So you know the types of players we're describing. Zion can play every position in the universe, so he qualifies. But RJ Barrett's in there, Jarrett Culver's in there, and Reddish is the most versatile of those guys, too. DeAndre Hunter's there, too.
Yeah.
But Reddish is the most versatile. Like, he could legitimately play all three positions if his versatility works out, which is where he gets interesting from a Suns perspective, because you look at him on a Suns board, and I think I'm going to bump him down a couple of spots, because can you trust the Suns to develop him? I don't think you can.
That's a good point. But if you trade away, let's say you trade a wing, you still want to have your stockpile of wings. You get a point guard with that wing trade. Maybe you do go after him. I mean, that's the thing about when you operate thinking like the Suns probably wouldn't be like, oh, we can't develop him. Let's not pick him. So I see your point, but I don't know if it's pointless to think that way. Like, us, we can definitely be like, yeah, they're not going to do that. But
there's a way where if they bring back Oubre, and it's Oubre and Bridges getting the most wing minutes, and then let's say Josh Jackson isn't on the roster and he's involved in a point guard trade or whatever, even if Josh is on the roster, there's a way where that guy being the third or fourth wing is actually a huge benefit, and you just slowly bring them along and don't force them to play minutes right away. Of course, that's not the best way to use your top three or top five pick. But at the same time, doing that with Culver and doing that, because all those guys, the thing I like the most is that I look at Hunter, Barrett, Reddish, and Culver, and I think all four of them do something different than those three guys that they have right now on the wing.
Yeah.
I think the most comparable maybe are actually Culver and Warren, or Culver and Barrett, or Barrett and Warren. But DeAndre Hunter, like, defensive expertise, that's where the Bridges comps come in, but he's much bigger, and he's more of a all guard the five or the four, and Bridges is all guard the one or the two. I really want DeAndre Hunter on the Suns. He's probably...
Yeah.
He's the guy I'll bump up. Reddish is what we talked about. He does everything, and kind of how they picture Josh Jackson to be, I guess, but it's much more simplified. You can definitely see him shooting it and stuff.
My whole thing from the Suns' perspective is, if you don't get Zion, none of these guys are going to make an immediate impact anyway. If they don't have to play, does it matter? Is that going to impact whether the Suns win 20 or 30 games next year? Like, they need to go get vets. Like, we've discussed that before. So I guess that's where I would actually bump up Reddish just because he's played well of late. But yeah, I mean, I'm not super high. I mean, Hunter's been really good. That's the other thing, is he has not that much of a scoring ceiling, but...
Yeah, like, how much, if you take RJ Barrett at two, how much does he actually help you in the next 2 years?
Probably not a whole lot.
Barely, really. He gives you some bench scoring, I guess, but that's not really what you need. I think Hunter is the guy who helps you the most right away.
Yeah.
Reddish is the most well-rounded. I think on, like, a Suns board, I would possibly have Reddish at two.
Yeah.
But the whole theme of this draft, which people are going to start realizing the more big boards come out, is the Ringer released theirs today. They have Culver at two.
Ooh.
They have Ja Morant at three. They have RJ Barrett at five. They have Nasir Little all the way down at 11. They have your boy, and yeah, this is not your boy, Grant Williams out of Tennessee at nine. Nikhil Alexander Walker, who's been on the draft radar for 2 years now, they have him at 10. They're... After you get past those five or six guys at the top, it's just, you get whatever.
Nasir Little could go second, and I wouldn't be surprised, and he's been trash as far as a college basketball player. Like, that's this draft.
Yeah, Jackson Hayes is like probably for sure, almost definitely a top 10 pick at this point, at least a lottery pick, and he's just kind of showed flashes that he can be a long-term center.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Zion would be dope.
Watch that game tonight.
Watch that game tonight. I urge you, the Notre Dame game we're never going to see. I doubt we're going to see a more complete, like, NBA performance from him, because he did all the NBA stuff that he's doing. Me and Max on the 7 Seconds or Less podcast debated this, because he thinks that Zion is the best prospect he's ever seen. And he actually said that he would rather have Zion than Booker and Ayton. Which is super high praise for Zion. But the discussion we had on Zion was, my feelings are that he hasn't showed an NBA optimized game enough to warrant that type of level of hype, but he's still far and away the best prospect in this draft. There's no one even close to him. If he had a serious like Embiid type of injury scare, I would still take him number one, no hesitations. I would not care.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would not care.
No.
Even if he's all the athleticism guy, whatever.
Take it.
Yeah, I would take him. So it's lottery night last year was nerve-wracking, but I think this year is more of even a crapshoot, honestly. It's
literally more of a crapshoot, yeah.
Because I think the only team that's going to be, you can say this any year, but I think this is the year more than others where there's so much riding on the team that picks one, because teams pick two, they're like, well, at least we get Marvin Bagley or Luka Doncic, or if you look at like past years, at least we get Brandon Ingram or something like that. And then this year it's like, oh God, I wonder if the value on those picks is going to be lower in trades because of it. I think it probably is.
Granted, that's the prime environment for the whole I'm trading up to draft Nassir Little number two. So if the Suns got number two and someone loved him, like, yeah, hey.
And rookie contracts are super valuable right now. So yeah, that's the other thing to realize. Because if you get a rookie who is good right away, like the Suns are going to have Mikal Bridges on $3 or $4 million a year for the next 4 years, which is incredibly valuable. Like he's already far exceeded his contract worth this season, and he's a rookie.
Anything else?
No, I hope we come back on Monday or Tuesday or whatever it is and have some basketball we can talk about, because there's just no point in talking about what we've seen the past 3 weeks. We didn't even talk about Tyler Johnson playing because he was just bad, and Brian Anderson was like, hey, I'm not here anymore, so here's the you can't shoot bug or whatever.
Everyone gets that bug who comes here, except TJ Warren.
We'll see when he comes back.
It's me knocking on.
That's me just draining the life out of the podcast if there's anything left in it. All right. Subscribe on iTunes and all that stuff. Leave a review. Be honest. We've seen some honest ones lately that have led to changes in my bio that make me laugh every now and then.
Make sure you're honest about Kellen, not Kevin. Yeah. Oh, I got our names mixed up. It's bad.
Please take everything out on Kellen, as always. I mean, that's pretty much the story of my life the past 2 years, but let's not change it. Let's keep it going. All right, everyone. Hope you have a good rest of your week. We'll see you next time.